I hope it's not too big a claim to say that that I believe this message can change your life. I won't suggest that because of me, because I am nothing without God. He's given us His Word, and I think if you and I will be receptive, that literally the contents of what I'm going to talk about today can change the entire trajectory of your life. If you'll allow God to speak to you, to appropriate that in your life, it can change the course, the trajectory of your life. You know, we're talking about this idea of the butterfly effect. If you weren't here last week and you're going, man, I have no idea what you're talking about with this butterfly effect thing. It's a theory that kind of comes under as a subset of chaos theory and science that suggests that a butterfly flapping its wings in Africa can have significant influence and impact on the weather pattern of, say, Texas, and a tornado or a cyclone or something like that. You say, well, that seems kind of weird. Well, I think the idea there is that there is an interdependency in this global ecosystem, that everything has an emphatic point and a point of connectedness to everything else in the way that God has designed it. Yet there is this sense of control. And the same thing applies in the heavenly realms, where God as sovereign has control over the moral agents of the universe. But then in things that we do, it causes ripple effects or consequences, sometimes from very small to very great. Last week, we looked at the life of Stephen, and we saw the power of an individual life. This butterfly effect and what this one life created when he flapped his wings. And this week, what I'd like to do is drill down just a slight bit deeper. And I'd like to talk to you about the power of a single, solitary choice. And we're going to illustrate that in the scripture in just a moment, but I'd like to give you just a second to ponder upon a man named Nelson Mandela. Some of you know who he is. Some of you may or may not know who he is, but he is kind of an icon of freedom. It's an interesting read if you read some of the history of Nelson Mandela in the country of South Africa, where I have been. And of course, still, he's revered as an icon in South Africa. And the interesting thing about Nelson Mandela is that early on in his life, there was kind of a defining choice that he made, and it was this, simply this, that racism is wrong, that apartheid needs to cease. And so in his mind and by his own doing, he determined that everything related to apartheid in South Africa must be rebelled against, must be withheld. And he tried it diplomatically and he tried it politically, and none of that was working. And so he moved to armed resistance in the face of a government that was trying to impose this upon everyone. He knew it was wrong. And so through this one lens, Nelson Mandela looked, and it was this lens that said that apartheid is wrong, and I will do everything in my power, everything humanly possible, to make sure that it is not an ongoing reality. As a result of that, virtually every decision that he made in his life had something to do with this defining decision, this defining moment, and as a result, other things kind of started falling into place. It cost him some things. It cost him two marriages because the strain and the stress of his resistance to this entire thing called apartheid. He was serious about this, and it cost him two marriages. It cost him 27 years of his life in a jail. And even in that jail, he was given opportunities by the government that was to be able to be released. But in the time that he was in there, he just said no, because they wanted him. They said, you know, you got to give up this fight and we'll release you. And he said, it's not worth it. I'm willing to stay here imprisoned rather than to be released and still be in prison. Nelson Mandela had an idea of what he wanted to do. Ultimately, he did find his freedom, and the government did come around, and there was a popular election, and Nelson Mandela was elected as the president of South Africa. Kind of on the back end. It took a long route to be able to get there, and things are still not perfect by any stretch of the imagination in South Africa or in the United States or in any other place for that matter, but they are distinctly different than they were, because this man had a defining choice set before him that made all the difference in his life. And what I would say to you is this, and if you want to jot this down, I would. That one defining choice can chart the course of your entire life. One defining choice can chart the course for your entire life. Do not miss this. You see, with Nelson Mandela, it was this choice that he would do anything he could to oppose apartheid and that it would cease. And so he made this decision. And as a result, all of these other decisions, kind of in a butterfly effect way, made themselves. Because he had already made one defining choice. And through that defining choice, everything else seemed to happen. Everything else seemed to domino from one defining choice. You've made them. You may or may not know that you've made them, but you've made them too. You've made defining choices in your life. I've run into people who have made interesting ones. Sometimes they're positive. Sometimes they're not so much. Maybe as a young person, your mom and dad weren't really there for you, and you determined, no matter what, I'm going to make sure that I'm there for my kids because I didn't have a very good upbringing. And here's the choice that you made as a new mom or a new dad. The choice, the defining choice that set everything else in order was this. No matter what, my kids come first. No matter what. And it is the lens through which you see everything else in your life. My children come first. Here's the problem. Ephesians 5 says, no, they don't. It says your husband or your wife comes first. Your relationship to God comes first, preeminently, then your responsibility to your husband or wife, then to your children. And it's no wonder that we're living in a generation where we have kid CEOs in the home. They run the place. Why? Because mom and dad have made a decision that no matter what, children come first. And the kids are running the joint. The animals are keeping the zoo. Don't lie, you've been to Wegmans. You've been to Tops. You've been out to eat. You know what time it is. It's not the intent of God, but we've made this defining choice, and as a result, we choose all of these other things. And it's amazing how at the end of that time, when now we're empty nesters, then these marriages, so-called, break up. Why? Because it was all about the children, and it was not about the marriage. Moms and dads, let me just say this to you as an aside. It's free. You don't have to pay for it. Greatest lesson you'll ever teach your kid, mom, love their father. Sir, love your wife. Vision is more caught than it is taught. And I promise you, the greatest impact you will have on your children is a husband and a wife loving one another, investing in one another. So we've made these defining choices. Maybe the defining choice that you made was different than that. Maybe you faced rejection when you were younger and you decided, I'm not going to ever be rejected again. I will be accepted. No matter what, I'm going to be accepted. And that has been the defining choice for you that you have made through which you see every other choice in your entire life. And those decisions are already made because you've already decided I will be accepted. You know what that means? It means you've bought into the whole idea of possessions being everything to everyone and that people are judging you by the way you look. You bought it because you've got to be accepted. You've decided that you've got to do everything in your power to be a success. Why? Because I will be accepted. I will be the best at whatever I do. I'm driven by that. Maybe you're a young lady who gave yourself to all kinds of relationships that you shouldn't have given yourself to. Why? Because you just wanted to be accepted. And everything you saw was through that lens right there. It was a defining choice that set into motion everything else in your entire life. And your life has, the course of your life has been charted by that defining choice. We're not alone. We're not the only ones who make defining choices. They were doing it as deep back into the scripture as you want to go. If you want to climb back into the book of Genesis, you'll find people making defining choices. And in fact, there's somebody I want to introduce you to today who made defining choices that set the events of his life in motion and charted the course for his life and helped him to do something incredible. Listen to this. Some of the lesser decisions of our life are already made when we've dealt with the defining decisions of our lives. That those decisions aren't even decisions for us anymore because they just fall down in front of us because we've made a life-defining choice. And it changes everything about the trajectory of our life. We meet Joseph in Genesis chapter 37, and he's a 17-year-old, just a teenager, Joseph. He's helping work with the sheep and doing all this stuff, and he's favored by his dad. His dad's name is Jacob, but other places, you know, remember his name was changed to Israel as well. So when you're reading in Genesis, sometimes you get confused because you're going, Jacob, Israel, what's the deal? What's going on? Same guy, okay? But Joseph was favored by his dad, Jacob. In fact, pick up with me in Genesis chapter 37, beginning in verse number 3. It says this. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Okay, so it's starting out great for Joseph. Pretty much all of his brothers hate his guts. All right, now you're thrilled, aren't you? You're going, where are you going with this message anyway? Well, stay with me. The train will roll down the tracks and we will bring it into the depot. All right? Joseph's brothers hate his guts. Now, here's the thing about Jacob. Jacob sometimes was a little amiss on wisdom. Now, he ended up on the bottom line getting it right ultimately. But sometimes Jacob, I was just like, well, dude, what are you thinking? You know, as a dad, it's one thing if you're a parent and you got a favorite. It's another thing if you got a favorite and you're dumb enough to tell people. Come on. I mean, is that like the height of ignorance? Yeah, these are my kids. I like him the best. Yeah, this guy. Whew. Yeah, you want him? I don't know what I'm going to do with that guy. Yeah, this one I like. This one I don't have any idea. Are you a moron? I mean, no parent does that. If you had a favorite, at least you don't say anything about it. Jacob not only establishes, I love Joseph more than these guys, but while they're out sweating in manure-stained gray, he's got a richly ornamented Ralph Lauren vestige to put on Joseph. So Joseph's walking around in this flowing like coat with many colors and lots of ornaments, and he's styling this polo gig, and his brothers smell like sheep stuff. Except he's like O'Day cool robe over here. So you know they're loving that. They're thinking to themselves, we already don't like you, and now you're Mr. Stylin', and we are walking around in scraps. What is Dad thinking? So it gets worse. Joseph, while he's out there with his brothers in the field, he has this dream. And in this dream, there are these kind of, you know, sheaves of wheat that are growing up. And Joseph says, hey, guys. Joseph, shut up. Hey guys, I had this cool dream. There were these sheaves of wheat and each of us had them. And my sheaf grew up higher than yours. And all of your sheaves bowed down to mine. Isn't that cool? It's like, do you have a death wish, brother? They already hate your guts. You're already walking around in Dad's cool robe that he made for you, and they don't have squat. And now you're telling them about this dream, and they're saying, do you think we're going to bow down to you, that you're one day going to rule over us? Are you out of your mind? And Joseph's saying, hey, I'm just telling you what the dream was. Now, the cool thing about Joseph is he just is innocent. He's just like, yeah, it's just a dream. I was just having it. I'm not running for any office. Just had a dream. Here it is. So one day, Dad, Jacob, sends Joseph out into the fields near Shechem where the brothers are tending sheep. He says, I want you to check on them, bring me a report back how they're doing. And so he says, sure, I'll go out there. Well, when they see him coming, not good. Oh, here he comes. Dreamer Ralph Lauren boy. Yeah, there's a couple things I'd like to do with him. Let me think. Oh, yeah, kill him. That's what I want to do. I want to kill him. So they're thinking, we're going to kill him. They decide, let's just throw him in this pit. Let's kill him. And let's just tell Dad that some wild animal got to him. So finally, Reuben, the oldest, he steps up and he says, no, we can't kill him. So they come up with this plan. And the plan is this, that they basically are going to throw him into this pit. And they're going to leave him there maybe or whatever. And they're going to take his robe and they're going to chop it all up. And then they're going to put goat's blood on it. And they did all these things. They ended up selling him to this Ishmaelite band of people that were coming by, and they sold Joseph into slavery to the Ishmaelites, and they took his robe, all torn and tattered with goat's blood on it, and gave it to Dad, Jacob, and said, is this your son's robe? We want you to confirm it. We're not sure. We think we found his robe, and it looks like something bad must have happened. Yeah. Jacob says, you better believe something bad happened. Now I'm gonna be sad until the day I die. And they said, oh, Dad, you know, you'll grieve. And he said, no, listen, I'm gonna go to the grave, brokenhearted. To the grave. So he got sold to the Ishmaelites. It's interesting because he didn't just get sold to the Ishmaelites, because then Potiphar buys him from the Ishmaelites. Pick up with me in Genesis 39, beginning in verse number 1. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, who was an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, in fact, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Now, here's what I want to do. I want to run you through a series of choices that Joseph is going to be facing, and I want to be able to run through our minds why the defining choices change everything about the choices that we make. The first easy choice to me that Joseph had, if you're just asking me, would have been bitterness. Bitterness toward God. Let me just back up for a second. Joseph is despised and hated by his brothers. They betray him. They sell him out, fake his death, sell him to the Ishmaelites, who ultimately sell him to Potiphar. Yet what we find out is when he's in Potiphar's house, that apparently his relationship with God is in good order. Because God is blessing him to no end. He's not spewing out bitterness against his brothers. He's not spewing out bitterness against God. In fact, it seems just the opposite, because God is working in Joseph's life in a significant way. He's giving him a prosperous life. He's giving him success, and he's giving him favor. Why is that? Because if it's me or you, let's just pause for just a second. Your family, your brothers and sisters, hate your guts, fake your death, sell you into slavery. How you doing with that? You doing good? You need counseling? Where are you at on that? I mean, if it's me, I don't have enough money to pay for the sessions I need. Are you with me? Some of you are going, well, if it were me, I'd probably be, praising the Lord with hands lifted high. Yeah, shut up. Not true. You would not. You'd be yelling with your fists clenched that you wanted to knock somebody out. You'd probably be looking toward bitterness. Why wasn't Joseph bitter? Here's what I think. All right, The reason I think he wasn't bitter is because as a young man at 17 years old, he had been sitting around his dad quite often. He'd not yet gotten to the place where he was just out in the fields all day, every day, although he was out in the fields quite a bit, but not quite like his brothers, because his dad would keep him close and then send him out to check on the brothers. Still a teenager, young man. What's he doing when he's sitting around with his dad? They didn't have TV back then. They didn't have iPods. He didn't go to the movies. Wasn't listening to the radio. Wasn't surfing the net. They talked. I know. Seriously. They talked. I know, it's crazy. It's nuts. Whew. Who would do that? Who's crazy enough to talk when you can do all this other stuff? So what did they talk about? Well, here's what I guess. My guess is that Jacob was telling stories to his son Joseph about his great-granddad. You know who your great-granddad was? His name was Abraham. And your grandfather, who was born to Abraham, was named Isaac. There was a time where God had called Abraham to make a sacrifice. And he brought Isaac up this mount called Moriah. And he was going to sacrifice him. Dagger in the stomach. Can you see Joseph, little Joseph, just sitting there listening? Dad, You're not thinking about that, are you? It's just not like a family thing that we do. Just like after breakfast or something, you know. Hey, come on up. I'm going to stab you in the gut. That's not what we do, right? No. Listen to the end of the story. Joseph. Abraham, your great-granddad, takes your grandfather up to Mount Moriah. And before he plunges the knife into him, God provides a ram in the thicket so that he can be sacrificed. And Abraham knew all along God was going to come through, because when he was leaving with Isaac, he told those he was leaving, he said, we're going up to make the sacrifice and we will return. He knew. You know what he knew, Joseph? Listen close. That you can trust God. He knew it. You can trust him. In fact, I could tell you some stories from my own life, Joseph. Your uncle Esau, me and him had it was a little tough. As you know by my name Jacob, which I like being called Israel now more because my name Jacob meant deceiver or supplanter, and I had a little mischievous side. Joseph, don't you even think about it. I had a little mischievous side for a while, and with Esau, I kind of ripped him off a little bit, you know, and stuff. It was not good. you know, with my dad and all. I kind of ripped him off a little bit. But God worked in the midst of that, and we saw reconciliation. You know what I can tell you, Joseph? God, he's faithful. He can be trusted. You know, even when I wanted to marry Rachel, I told Laban, I said, I'll work for 7 years if you'll give me her. He said, sure. So I worked for 7 years, but it just seemed like a couple days because I loved her so much. And then in the honeymoon suite, after that 7 years when I was getting married, in the honeymoon suite, he slips in the oldest daughter, Leah. Yeah. Wasn't happy. So I worked another 7 years to marry Rachel. But you know what? It was difficult. My life's been hard. But you know what I want to tell you, Joseph? God, you can trust him. He's been faithful to me. He's been faithful to your dad. He's been faithful to your granddad. He's been faithful to your great-grandfather. He's trustworthy. So here's Joseph as a 17-year-old, sold out by his brother, sold into slavery with memories of conversations that have gone on with his father. And instead of growing bitter sitting in Potiphar's house, he make this life-defining choice. Listen to it, write it down. Because God can be trusted, he deserves my loyalty. Life-defining choice for Joseph. Because God can be trusted, he deserves my loyalty. It's going to be a life-defining choice for you as well, and I'm going to show you that in just a minute. So instead of bitterness, he makes his way toward understanding that God is trustworthy and God knows what's going on. And even though Joseph says, life seems to be getting hard, but it was hard for my dad. It was hard for my granddad. It was hard for my great-granddad. They faced all kind of stuff. Some of it they brought on themselves. Some of it they did not bring on themselves. Yet here's what they keep saying to me through the corridors of time. Joseph, God is faithful. God can be trusted, young man. So as a 17-year-old, he is banking on that, and he's sold out into slavery into Potiphar's house. You think it gets easier from there? It doesn't. Things go from bad to worse because Joseph not just happens to be a good-looking guy, but he happens to run into Potiphar's wife. Genesis chapter number 39, pick up with me in verse number 6. Joseph was well-built and handsome. Pause right there. Some of you can go ahead and go, yeah, sounds like me. Now stop. Joseph was well-built and handsome. Not me, but you. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, after day, after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Now, here would be easy choice number two. If easy choice number one was being bitter toward God, and that would have been very easy for Joseph to do, here's easy choice number two. Enjoy no risk sexual pleasure. That's easy choice number two. He's like, hey, dude, man, this, no problem. No strings attached. Easy. Nobody home. She's in charge. I'm a slave. She says, do it. I do it. Everything's cool. I can kind of have my fun. Nobody hurt. No harm, no foul. In fact, had Joseph been a bitter guy, Joseph would have been saying, I don't even belong here in the first place, so I'm just going to go ahead and have my fun. It would have been very easy for Joseph to choose that. But Joseph instead, listen, did not make his decision in that moment. He made his decision long before that. His decision was this: God can be trusted, and he deserves my loyalty. So whatever comes, I've already looked at it through this defining choice. God can be trusted, and he deserves my loyalty. So even if that means Potiphar's wife is trying to seduce me, I'm not going to do it. He says, how can I sin against God and do this thing? How did Joseph know that was a sin? The law had not been given at this point. The Ten Commandments is sometimes we look at that and we just kind of blend everything together, don't we? Ten Commandments weren't even in effect at this point where it pointed out what adultery was. Joseph knew because it was written on his heart. He knew by listening to his dad, by some of the things that had happened in generations prior to him, he knew what was going on. He knew it was a sin against God. And he said, absolutely not. Why? Because Joseph had already determined God can be trusted and he deserves my loyalty. It was a life-defining choice. And so now these other choices are facing the butterfly effect of this one choice. And he doesn't even have a choice in that moment. It's not even a choice for him because he's already made his mind up. God can be trusted. I'm not going to sin against him. I'm going to be loyal to him. You think it gets easier. Man, he's been sold into slavery, and now he's faced Potiphar's wife who's tried to seduce him. It doesn't get any easier. You remember what happens. Remember, he refuses her time and time and time and time again, refuses her. Finally, she reaches out for him and grabs his cloak. And Joseph leaves his cloak in her hand and takes off. Some of you, by the way, when I've talked with people before and they've said to me, you know, Pastor Jerry, this whole sin thing, I didn't have a choice. Stop. I'm not buying. You did have a choice. You always do. If you're a child of God, there is no sin that's overtaken you where you do not have a way of escape, the scripture says. You always have a door. There is always a way of escape. Now, you're going to have to look for it, but there is always a way of escape. And do you know what sometimes the best measure is? Two legs and a good run. That's what Joseph did. He left his cloak in her hand and took off, no clothes on, and just bolted. Sometimes your best way out of a sinful scenario, get out of Dodge. Just beat it. Well, you know, I thought about discussing the fire. Don't, and bolt. Start trying to dialogue with the devil and you'll find yourself losing. Just get out. Joseph said, I'm gone. I'm out of here. But what did Potiphar's wife do? When her husband comes home, she shows him the cloak and she says, that slave of yours, Joseph, he tried to rape me. Okay, if it wasn't bad enough that he got sold into slavery to begin with and his family hated his guts, then he tries to get seduced by Potiphar's wife and he ends up leaving. And now she lies about it so that she tells Potiphar what's going on. And look what Potiphar does. Genesis 39, verse 19. When his master, Potiphar, heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He, Potiphar, burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. This would be easy choice number three for Joseph. If his first one was bitterness toward God and the second one was enjoying kind of a no-risk sexual relationship or sexual pleasure, here's the third one. To have a heart rebellion against God because of this injustice. I mean, he was now thrown in jail because a woman lied about him raping her, and now he's sitting in jail. If it's me or you, are we not going, God, what is the story here? This is completely not right. We know it's an injustice. We know it's been trumped up. We know this is junk, God. Why are you allowing this to happen to me? Why are you doing this to me, God? And so now you begin rebelling in your heart against God. Why didn't Joseph do that? I'll tell you why. Because he had made a defining choice that was charting the course of his entire life. And that choice was this: God can be trusted and he deserves my loyalty. No matter what was transpiring in that moment, he was trusting God. Interesting. It didn't get any better for Joseph. Now, he met some friends in jail. It's always good, you know, to meet some friends in jail. One was the, I wouldn't know, but I'm sure it's good. I wasn't speaking from experience. Now, one was the cupbearer to Pharaoh, and the other was the baker, Pharaoh's baker. They had gotten thrown in jail because they had fallen out of favor with Pharaoh, and, you know, Pharaoh was kind of whimsical, fickle. He could just get mad at you and throw you in jail or kill you or cut your head off, whatever he wanted to do, because he was the man. So he throws them in jail, and Joseph is in jail with them. So, sitting in jail, he's talking to these guys, and these guys are saying to Joseph, hey, we got a problem. Joseph said, what's the problem? We're having these dreams, and we have no idea what they mean. No idea. So you know what Joseph does? Joseph explains the dreams to them. Now, for the cupbearer, it turned out great because Joseph said, hey, you know, Pharaoh's going to lift your head and you're going to be restored back to your position. But for the baker, he said, yeah, he's going to lift your head off. It's going to be bad. Look what happens in Genesis 40 when Joseph kind of interprets their dreams. Joseph says, this is what it means, Joseph said to him. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position. He's talking to the cupbearer. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in this dungeon. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, Pharaoh did, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Oh man, it's going good for Joseph, isn't it? Come on. Brothers hate you, sold into slavery, fakes your death. Ishmaelites buy you, sell you to Potiphar. You're in Potiphar's hand, things seem to be going well, even though you're kind of in jail and as a slave. But then Potiphar's wife sees you, you're good looking. She says, I want you. I say, absolutely. He says, absolutely not. Leaves. She frames him for rape. He goes to jail. Now he meets these two guys and he says, hey, cupbearer and baker, you're having problems with these dreams. God can give you the interpretation of these dreams. Here it is. Here's what's going to happen to you. And then it happens to the cupbearer just like he said. But he told the cupbearer, hey, would you just do me a favor? Remember me when you get out. Tell Pharaoh that I'm in here and get me out of here because I'm not supposed to be in here. And fortunately for Joseph, the cupbearer forgot all about him. Going great. Now at this point, here's easy choice number four for Joseph to fall into. Despair. Isn't that where you'd be? You're thinking to yourself, God has finally come through. Here's where God is showing his faithfulness. The cupbearer to Pharaoh is sitting right here. I've interpreted his dream. And now when he gets released, he's going to put a good word in for me and things are going to be good. It's going to work out for me. And then the cupbearer forgets him. Forgets him. Not for a week, not for 2 weeks, not for a year. 2 full years pass by. But why wasn't Joseph living in despair? Because Joseph had made a defining choice that had charted the course of his entire life, and it was this: because God can be trusted, he deserves our loyalty. Is this going to pay off for Joseph? I mean, as we look at it, we start going, yeah, are you kidding me? We often look at the Bible because we know the front from the end, and we just turn it off. Listen closely. Do not turn this story off. Live in it. Live in it for a minute. You're in despair. The person you thought that had the keys to be able to get you out has forgotten all about you. 2 years have passed by. It is not a good scenario at all. But you're not in despair if you're Joseph, because Joseph's made up his mind that God can be trusted and he deserves my loyalty no matter what happens. Good, bad, right, wrong, whatever happens, I'm going to trust God because he's trustworthy and I'm going to be loyal to him. 2 years go by. Joseph's still in prison. And all of a sudden, interestingly enough, Pharaoh has a dream that he can't figure out. The cupbearer, after hearing news of Pharaoh complaining to him, Pharaoh saying, I'm having this dream and I have no idea what it means. Cupbearer, can you help me out? And the cupbearer goes, uh-oh, forgot about my man Joey. He's playing harmonica in a jail cell and I've been out here and I told him I would remember him and I've forgotten him. And then he says, Pharaoh, there's a guy named Joseph and he can get it done for you. So look what happens, Genesis chapter 41, I'm sorry. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream and no one can interpret it, but I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Listen to what he says. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Wow. Here's easy choice number five for Joseph. Easily could have fallen into this. Pride. Selfishness. Are you kidding me? Listen. Joseph has been forgotten, and then all of a sudden Pharaoh has a dream. And then Pharaoh brings him up in front of him and says, hey, I've heard that you can interpret dreams. Man, if you're Joseph at this point, you might be going, Pharaoh, you better believe I can interpret dreams. Why don't you ask little cup boy over here whether I can interpret dreams? I'm the dream master interpreter. Nobody interprets like me. I mean, literally, if you're Joseph, you're thinking, this is your shot. You better market yourself. You better promote yourself. You better be making a good showing in front of Pharaoh, because this is your only hope of getting out of this joint. Your cupbearer man's not going to do it. You've seen where the baker ended up. If you're going to make a good showing, now is the time. Stand your ground, make a good showing, and impress him. And he says, yeah, I've heard you can do this. And Joseph says, I can't. I can't do it. But God can. Come on. How in the world could a guy do that. Here's why. Because he made a defining choice that shaped the entire trajectory of his life. And it was this. Because God can be trusted, he deserves our loyalty. And he trusted him. What was the outcome? Well, Joseph interpreted the dream for him. Basically told him, hey, it's going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, and you're going to have to be able to make sure you make provision for all of this. And then Joseph gave him a plan in context with that. He said, hey, whoever's running the show, appoint somebody and have them set aside enough grain for Egypt during this years of abundance so that when the famine comes, you'll be able to have it and you can sell it to the people and you'll have enough so that you won't be affected by this. Pharaoh liked that so much that he went ahead and appointed Joseph as the man. Genesis chapter 41, verse 41, it says, so Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen. Does that sound familiar? He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in a chariot as his second in command. And men shouted before him, make way! Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Are you kidding me? The same kid, this little teenage kid, who went to check on his brothers who hated his guts because he was wearing a cool jacket, is now the second in command of all of Egypt. And when he's coming by on the chariot, people are saying, get out of his way. This is Joseph. He's not even Egyptian. He's a Hebrew. And he is second in charge. And he had the plan. And God had honored this. And he's got the signet ring on. He's got the cool duds on that he used to have. He is now sitting in an incredibly influential spot. And you know what happened? Famine came. And the famine not only just affected Egypt, but it affected all the known world. And people in Israel were starving to death. And you remember who some of those people were? Joseph's family. So his brothers show up, and they're going to try and buy food from Joseph, but they don't know it's Joseph. So there's an interchange back and forth. There's a couple of trips back and forth from Israel to Egypt where Joseph is feeling out, is my dad still alive? And he's asking some backdoor questions, finding out about the family and all this. And then finally one day, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers in Genesis 45. Notice what it says. Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there's been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Listen to this statement. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. Seriously, are you kidding me? How can this guy who's been through all of this stuff, how could he not just be sitting there full of rebellion and frustration and arrogance and pride and saying, oh, you hungry now, mister? You boys hungry? Here's a robe with some goat's blood on it. Why don't you eat that? Why don't you stick that in your lunchbox and see how that sets with you? But he loves him and he says, hey, don't be distressed, because you know what I know? It wasn't you who did this to me. It was God. And you know what I found out? Guys, it was just like Dad told me. It was just like Abraham, just like Isaac, just like Dad. God can be trusted. And he deserves our loyalty. Do you see it? It was a defining choice that Joseph made in his life that literally had a butterfly effect on every other decision that went forward in his life, that he determined God can be trusted and he deserves our loyalty. Ladies and gentlemen, there's power in a single choice. Because that choice, if it's a defining choice, can have a butterfly effect on everything else that you do. Let me drill down just to you for a second, okay? Because you've heard kind of a historical statement, and I know it inspires you and it can challenge you. But let me drill at you for a second. If you're sleeping, wake up. Listen close. Let me drill at you for a second. Here it is. You've had some injustice at work. You've been passed over for a promotion. You've been treated poorly. You don't have the corner office. I don't know what it is, but it's happened to you, and you don't like it. And as a result, you've let bitterness creep into your life. Here's what I'd recommend. Change the defining choice of your life. Instead of growing bitter and making a small choice, make a large choice, and it's this. God knows what He's doing, and He can be trusted. And He deserves your loyalty. You've had relationship difficulties. Maybe it's not going as well as it should be in your marriage. Maybe you're a single adult and it's not going well there either. And you made some choices to either give into sexual temptation, or you've made some choices toward abandonment, or some of those things that you decided, I'm going to give in because I deserve some pleasure. I'm not getting it from my husband or my wife. I deserve happiness. I'm not getting it from my husband or my wife. And you've denied God's truth and you've said, this is the path that I'm going to go down. But instead of making those little choices, may I recommend that you make a defining choice that'll change the course of your life, and it's this. God knows what's going on. He can be trusted, and He deserves your loyalty. Maybe you've been betrayed by a loved one, much like Joseph. Maybe they're not out to kill you, but they've just kind of cut you out of the family. Maybe it's a brother, a sister, a mom, or a dad. Maybe it's a son or a daughter. Maybe it's a husband or a wife. You've been betrayed, you've been hurt, and now you're living a life of hatred and despondency. And you've let that fill your life. Here's a recommendation that I have. Stop choosing little things. Make a defining choice in your life that will change the trajectory of everything else. And it's this. God knows exactly what's going on there. And He can be trusted. And you ought to be loyal to Him. You're having health struggles. You're wondering why God did this to you. And in your life you feel despairing because they're beating you down. Maybe terminal. These are tough things to think through. But here's what I know. Instead of living your life in despair about what is transpiring in your life, make a greater choice, and it's this. God is trustworthy. He can be trusted. Even in that, He knows what's going on. He can be trusted. He deserves your loyalty. Maybe you've made a lot of money. You've been promoted. You're in good shape. Life's good. And as a result, you're living for yourself, living for consumption. And pride and selfishness and self-aggrandizement has controlled your life. May I remind you, whether it's bad times or good, stop choosing little things and make a defining choice. Because God, He can be trusted. And He deserves your loyalty. Let's pray together. God, we've heard a lot in this moment. And only You can make clear for us what needs to transpire in our hearts and lives. And God, I recognize that there are people here who have made a commitment to follow after You with all of their heart. They have entrusted their life to our Savior and our Lord Jesus Christ. They have turned from their sin and placed their faith and trust in You. But that sometime after, they have bought into a bad bill of goods. They bought into ideas that are defining their lives that aren't the way that You want it defined. And it's causing choice after choice to compound upon another in a trajectory that You don't want them going. God, I pray that You'd free them from that. That they would recognize what that defining choice has been in their life and what lens they're looking through and how it may be causing other things in their life. And God, You would bring that to the surface by Your Spirit in their heart and their life. And God, I pray You would transform the narrative of their life to make it this, that You, God, can be trusted and that You deserve our loyalty. Whatever happens, whatever circumstance, whatever good, whatever bad, You can be trusted. And You deserve our loyalty. We may not see it. We may not see how it all plays out. But God, as we look backwards at the life of Joseph, we see Your faithfulness all through the process. And we see Joseph having made a choice to trust You and be loyal to You so that You could fulfill Your purposes, God, of literally saving Israel. Through this guy, saving the known world from famine and devastation, through this guy who made a single choice to say, You can be trusted and You will have my undivided loyalty. God, what would happen to us if we would do that? God, in my life, in the life of the people here who are listening to me under the sound of my voice or on the internet or on television, God, what would happen to us if we really trusted you with our lives and we said, no matter what happens, our loyalty is to you? God, what could happen? You could fulfill your purposes in us. God, would you help us to do that? Our heads bowed, eyes are closed, and you may be here and never have made the ultimate defining choice in your life. And that is to trust God. I'm talking about with your soul, your very heart, where you've recognized that as a sinner, and we all are, nobody's got to convince you or me, we've all sinned, we've all made mistakes, and as a result of that, you've got no chance of heaven. You're cut off from relationship with God. You're loved by Him, and God's made way for you, but you're cut off because of sin. That way is through Jesus Christ, who died on account of you and me because of our sin. He died to forgive it. He died to transform us. But it's going to require us receiving Jesus as our only way of salvation. Not that we can work our way there or somehow do enough good works to get there. It can't happen that way. Only through Jesus Christ and our loyalty to Him. And if you've never received Jesus Christ, and you want to be serious and understand that decision, here's what I want to ask you to do. When we dismiss in just a minute, I'm going to be in the fireside room. It's directly out the center aisle, across the atrium. I'll be waiting on you. Come and tell me you want to meet Jesus. Somebody's going to pray with you, share with you how you can know Him. But the decision's yours. If you want that life-defining decision, it's yours. I'm not going to force you. I'm not going to twist your arm. I'm not going to manipulate you. But I will be waiting on you if you're serious about that. All you have to do is take me by the hand and say, Pastor Jerry, I want to give my life to Jesus. We'll share with you how you can do that. Father, thank you for the truth. Man, it's so powerful. God, I love to be able, God, to be impacted by your truth. Thanks for that. Man, it matters to us. Thank you for teaching us, Holy Spirit. Thank you for speaking into our lives. Thank you for identifying in each of our lives what we need to course correct on and how we need to align our lives with a defining choice that charts the course for us. God, help us as your people to do that. May we see the fruit of that as we trust you in Jesus' name. Amen.